Welcome to the third podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley, and I blog at mctownsley.net, and my co-host is...
I'm Russ Garand. I blog at russgarand.com. Don't forget about Twitter. Matt is on Twitter at McTownsley, mctownsley, and I'm on there at Russ Garand.
And together we are the co-hosts of With Students in Mind, a podcast focused on students. And we are just two humble teachers here sharing our experiences and thoughts on education with you, our dedicated viewers. Russ, what has happened since episode two, just a few weeks ago? What's happened in your world?
Let's see. I'll try to keep it short. Last night went to see Avatar. I was telling you about that before we kind of started recording, and it blew me away. I think the kind of the best review I can give it is that I am not much of a movie watcher, and I also don't normally buy into the hype, but I can tell you that this movie is worth it. So it was pretty amazing. We went to the 3D show, and it was just visually, it was just stunning. So also, let's see, we had this past week, had a snow day and a two-hour delay. Kind of been thinking a lot about, I know a lot of the people that listen to are thinking about the same kind of stuff, thinking about what we can do on those snow days and how we can kind of extend school so we don't have to miss those days of learning. And starting a poetry unit in English. So kind of looking forward to getting that going.
Very nice, very nice. And you're sporting your 3D glasses. Very nice.
Skype hasn't enabled 3D yet, I guess. Maybe you're not wearing your 3D shirt. I don't
know what's going on. Nice. Well, we just started a new semester. We also had a snow day. And no two-hour delay for us, though, after that. We decided to drive on the icy roads. And we're starting a new semester, so all new students for me. Students kind of... that quiet time of the semester, they're all quiet, I'm talking a lot. It's kind of that awkward stage of teaching, but that's the way it goes. They'll be chit-chatting and learning more and more as the days go on. New thing for me is I'm just trying to kind of set a personal goal to get out more and talk with other teachers in my building. It's so easy to get excited about the online environment, Twitter and this podcast and so forth. I'm trying to set a personal goal of getting involved with other teachers, just interacting with them more often. So, kind of one of my personal.
I can add something real quick to that.
Do it, yeah.
On Twitter, Chris Rogers, who teaches out in New York State, has been kind of pushing that idea lately. I know he's been spending a lot of time in other teachers' classrooms during his prep period, and he's been kind of pushing other teachers to do the same. I think it's a great idea.
I've been convicted of that, and I think, kind of evaluating the change ratio of who's making the most impact online versus locally. And it's encouraging, but it's that at the same time. So just find that balance as always. So let's do a quick recap of the podcast. We're going to start with one thing we can teach you, followed by two perspectives. And finally, that part of the podcast where I get nervous with all the questions you ask me, the 3-minute gut check. So that's the format we're going to follow again today. Russ, go ahead and start us off with one thing we can teach you today about posturus.
All right, we're going to start with posturus today. I love posturus. It's become a huge... I think at first I didn't really get it, didn't know, what role it played in my online life, kind of how it was going to help me out. And what I've realized is that it's a pretty indispensable tool for me at this point. What posturus does is it gives you a blog, and the way you blog to it is by sending an email. You just send an email to post@posturus.com. Now, I guess to give our listeners a little bit of quick background, one of the reasons that we're doing this is because Matt has been using Vox for a couple of years, right? You want to tell me quickly about how that works?
Sure. I had a Palm Central phone. I had this Vox app. I learned about this thing called mobile blogging. Basically, if you're out somewhere, take a picture, type a little something, press post, and it posts it to the web for you. And it was just a quick, easy way to kind of highlight crazy food, cool places, that type of thing. At a hockey game, take a picture or something like that. And it was easy. It was simple. So I changed phones, thinking about maybe changing providers. So convince me. Tell me about posturus.
Well, and I love it because I think it's a great thing for family, I think, that idea of mobile blogging, because it's not so education-focused. I'm talking about between the two of us.
Sure.
It's just this way to blog that isn't so education-focused. And What I like about Posterous is that it saves me a bunch of time because I have my dad's on Facebook, you know, I've got some friends on Twitter, I've got a couple of places where I want to save things that I'm doing, and so what Posterous does well is that it lets you auto-post to different places. So the idea is if I'm out, Becky and I were out at Hy-Vee a couple of weeks ago and she was getting her favorite ice cream, peppermint ice cream, and so I snapped a quick picture of her, and all I have to do is send that to post@posterous.com, and it gets auto-posted to Twitter, it gets auto-posted to Facebook, it gets posted on my Posterous, and it also, Posterous recognizes that there's an image in the email, and the image gets saved to a folder in Picasa. And so those are four things, and then it also gets posted on Posterous. And so those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I lost count. You know, it's a bunch of stuff done for you with one click, which I love about it.
So, you know, I could maybe see some, even some implications like in a classroom. You know, is it possible that, you know, students or teachers could just be posting there on a consistent basis? I mean, I'm kind of getting convinced on the personal level because of the multiple posting options, but what are you thinking from a classroom perspective?
Definitely. If kids have a smartphone or any phone that can take a picture and send an email, it's great because you can also link up. They have a ton of auto post options. You can link up a Blogger blog. You can link up a WordPress blog. So the kids could take a picture, you know, send it out, and the subject line becomes the title. Anything you put in the body becomes the body of the post. And, you know, so kids could send out a picture of a, you know, experiment they're doing or something like that, and it'll get posted to all those different places. Another thing that's nice about it is you have a lot of control over the auto-posting options.
Okay.
So I could do, if I only wanted the picture to go to Twitter, then I would just send the email to twitter@posterous.com.
Okay.
Instead of post@posterous.com. And you can do that same thing with in the classroom. Let's say you only wanted it, let's say you had linked it up to a Twitter account for your classroom, but you only wanted this certain thing to go on your blog. Well, then you just send it to blogger@posterous.com or whatever. And you can combine things too. So I could go Twitter plus blogger@posterous.com, then it would skip Facebook.
Okay. Is there a way you could manage like the auto posting, you know, from a student's perspective, if they took a picture or something inappropriate, could you have it set up so it didn't auto post like a check mark the teacher does? Is there something
that's
is there a setting there?
That I do not know the answer to. Okay. I don't know. Let's see. I'm looking now. Contributors can post. Okay. So I've got an option where people can post, but I will moderate.
There you go.
So I'm assuming that would be, you know, that I would probably get some sort of notification that something's been posted and I have to okay it. So that would work pretty well.
Yeah.
I just like this idea of aggregating all these things that I'm doing into one email.
Yeah. I mean, taking a school field trip, there could be multiple perspectives, you know, smartphones or whatever, bringing all that information together, videos.
Yep.
I could see a lot
That's
of good
uses
nice
thing.
For
it. It does videos as well. It'll embed the video for you. And I've actually got mine linked up to YouTube, so it posts the video on Posterous, but then it also saves me a copy on my YouTube channel. So, yeah, it's great, and they're real easy to work with. I've had some questions in the past, and the actual creator got a hold of me on Twitter, and yeah, it's great.
I could see it being like a good classroom communication like tool instead of a newsletter. You know, it's just subscribe to this feed. And everything could be there, you know, videos, pictures.
Yep.
Be a really good tool.
The thing I really, really like about it, and I've said the thing I like about it about four times, but is just how it connects to all those different services. It's not asking you to have Posterous be your only service. You know, it's recognizing that there are different tools for different situations. And I was actually talking to my mentor. She teaches 7th grade in my building, and she does every year a trip with students out to Washington, D.C. And so she was just asking, you know, what is the best way for me to keep the parents back home updated with what we're doing? And so what we've done is she's going to set up a Twitter account and a Posterous blog. That way she only has to do one thing, but she's giving parents the choice of which do they want. You know, they don't have to join Twitter if they don't want to. They can just follow Posterous and get an email anytime it's updated. And all she has to do is send an email, you know, send that, take a picture with her BlackBerry, send an email to Posterous.
And it's the same consistent message, too, with one click or one, you know, press, whatever it is on her phone, which that's awesome.
Yeah, it works really well. All you have to do to get started is send an email to post@posterous.com. That's really as easy as it is. You just do that and then head on over to Posterous and claim your blog. They walk you through it. It's really easy. The auto post stuff. To be honest, the auto post stuff was a little confusing for me at first, but I'm wondering if that's just because it was such a new idea that I didn't get it. I think looking back, it's actually set up really easily and set up well to understand, but it's just not something I had, you know, it's like Twitter and Facebook are talking to each other. I don't really, you know, how is this working? And so it's actually set up pretty well. So
wrapping your mind around it. Okay. I think I'm convinced. I think I'm going to make the switch. I think,
All right. Looking forward to it.
You can look for more Posterous postings from this guy in the future.
Good.
All right. Let's move on to the second part of the podcast here. Two perspectives. Our topic today is motivation. And obviously, I'm a high school teacher, and you're a middle school teacher, Russ. So two perspectives on kind of the motivation piece here. Got a couple questions to get us started. So just quick, maybe, what are some strategies you use in your classroom, Russ, to motivate students? And motivate's kind of this loose term maybe we should talk a little bit about, too. So go ahead.
Well, one thing that I try to do, and I've tried to do it since the beginning of the year, is really focus on the words that I use, just the common language that we have in our classroom. And we talk all the time about learning. And it's something that the students kind of thought was kind of hokey at the beginning of the year, and I think there's probably a few that still do, but we talk a lot about just learning as opposed to, you know, is this going to be graded, and, you know, when's this due, that kind of stuff. And we just, you know, this is what we're learning, and, you know, this is what we're doing to learn it, and just kind of really try to focus on that. And for me, the reason I do that is to kind of instill like that long-term motivation, that lifelong learning, if you will,
sure,
just to help them realize that school and my classroom is just a place where we learn. You know, it just happens to be where they learn from 10:05 to 11:20 every day or whatever. You know, other than that, I really try to, it's tough. You and I have had this conversation before. I try to give them the chance to, go after what they like, interest. You know,
sure.
Try to make things high interest for them, but it's admittedly something I'm terrible at. I'm still, you know, if it weren't for my language arts blue box and my textbook, you know, I'm not good at finding those interest, like high interest. We're studying poetry now. I'm just not good at finding high interest poetry. And so that goes into motivation, I guess, is allowing the kids to bring in their own poetry, bring in, you know, if we're learning about author's purpose, bring in your own content, you know, if that's the understanding, if author's purpose is the understanding we're working toward, then any kind, you know, multiple types of content can help us learn that. So I'm trying to kind of be open to opening up the doors.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, we teach in this box where we have to teach certain things, you know, a poetry unit or whatever, and so those things by default are not going to be naturally motivating to certain students or to a certain part of the student population. That makes the whole motivation thing difficult. I think one of the things maybe we could focus on is, you know, today is how do we just motivate students in general? Even things like to be at school, to learn, and all those. Of course, we're going to bring in some content-specific things, but you know, there's always this question about intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation. There are some students that, you know, we could just be robots doing, you know, no emotions or anything, and there would still be students that are learning, and they would want to learn. And there's those students that, of course, just don't have that intrinsic motivation. You know, what does reality look like in a middle school classroom for that balance between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation? You know, the grades versus learn because you love it, that type of thing.
Well, I'll be real honest here. I'm hoping to learn a lot from you today.
I don't know how much
I had to share in this, honestly. Motivation is something I really struggle with.
Here's kind of my, you know, to create, you know, some fictitious characters here. You know, you got Johnny that just comes to class. And you say, Johnny, why is it that you come to class every day prepared, you want to learn, you do everything I tell you to do, and Johnny's just like, well, I just do. And there's Susie over here that, you know what, You can literally like get to know Susie. You can go watch her at the sports practice. You can go be there for her musical performance. You can get to know her on a personal level. And you say, Susie, why is it that you just decide that you'd rather sleep during class, or that you'd rather play your video games at night or whatever, instead of doing the things that you're supposed to do outside of class or even during class? And you just say, Susie, why is that? And Susie says, I don't know. And you've done all the things that the books and things tell you to do, and I don't know, maybe it's true. Maybe some people are true in saying that motivation towards school just decreases as students get older. You picture the kindergartners that are all there, happy to be at school. The only thing that they're upset about is when their shoe's untied or when they need a Kleenex, You get to high school and kids are just, I can't believe I have to be at school. I don't know. Is there some sort of balance, intrinsic, extrinsic, should we do more goal setting? I don't know.
So I think goal setting is one thing, and that gets to the point that I was going to bring up. And this is something that you are very good at, and I'm excited to learn more as we, keep doing this kind of stuff, is this idea of differentiation. And we talked about it last week with differentiated responsibility, or last episode or whatever. But, I think that's one thing that we do now that I'm thinking about this more, is we do goal setting. We call them SIPs. Student improvement plans, self-improvement plans, and so something where kids can set a goal of, in 4 weeks, where do I want to be versus now? And so I think that helps to keep them motivated because they have this thing that they're working toward. And for a lot of students, they've gotten pretty good at playing school, and so they're not... The grades aren't motivating for them. They already have all A's. So we talk about other things that they can do, like can they invite somebody to their lunch table that usually sits by themselves? And in middle school, that stuff is huge. Can they reach out to somebody that they haven't talked to before? That kind of thing.
Sure.
So I think that differentiation is where you can really get that going. And I don't mean to just throw that term around because it's a hot term. I really mean that you have to do it individualized, because like you're saying, it's not blanket. Things don't just work for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I think, you bring up something, a good point there, maybe from a little bit different angle, but relationships can play a big role in this too. But again, reality comes into play here, and it's difficult to develop relationships with 100 and some kids at once, or, for my... teaching block schedule for me, 70 some kids at once. Even then, it's still a challenge. If I only had, 20 students a day, I think we could probably get a lot more done, or at least dig deeper into this motivation thing. Ideally we want students to become like these self-regulated, intrinsic motivated type students. That's my guess, at least, that we want them to be that way. And I think you tapped on something earlier, having those critical conversations. I know I brought that up last week too, or last episode too. I don't know, the one thing that I kind of struggle with a little bit though is when you get to that threshold of where you realize that myself as a teacher, I've kind of used up all the tools in the bag. Okay, let's take a quick moment here and just do kind of a lightning round back and forth of some of the things that we've done in our classroom to motivate students. I'm sure there's some that are associated with your blog, Russ, and some of the things you've been doing there with writing. Go ahead and share with us a few things there maybe you've done.
Okay, well, a couple quick ones, and I'll let you share again, too. I've got, a featured posts section on our blog. So some of the kids that maybe don't have many comments, I'll feature their posts to help them get some interaction from the audience. And then also that audience, too, is just helping kids find that audience that's motivating for them. I had kids write in their journals yesterday about whether or not they feel like the blog actually helps them become a better writer. And if I were to give them the option the rest of the year to not post on the blog, would they still post? And so the overwhelming majority said that they would, and it's because of that audience is what most of them talked about. So that's, that's another thing that I'll do. Also kind of showcasing student work. So I've got an Elmo in my room. If I'm having students, we had them create a graphic organizer once, and so... find those students that don't normally get their work showcased, that aren't normally ready to be called on, and, pull their stuff up, show it to the whole class, have them explain it. And then when I'm doing discussions, I'll normally start in a small group, so have the kids discuss in their four-person small group before coming to the large group. That way, everybody gets a chance to share in that small group.
So kind of bounce their ideas off each other, that type of thing?
Yep.
Yeah, I think.
How about you?
Yeah, one of the that's one of the things I've learned is that from a large group perspective, you know, from a classroom perspective, students aren't necessarily as motivated initially to do or say something. But as you point out, giving them an opportunity to be in a small group first or with a partner, kind of a think, pair, share type thing, is going to increase their motivation on an ongoing basis. You know, I can think of a couple times, you know, especially at the beginning of the semester here, where students are less likely to talk. They're just kind of in that quiet feeling out the teacher stage. Doing things like getting them up out of your seats to go find someone else to share with, it increases their motivation. They want to do it. And I've also found, you know, as we maybe have talked about earlier, is it's not always really about finding that highly motivating lesson. It's sometimes about finding something that's subtly motivating, or, you know, subtle for us, but seemingly motivational for them, to do in the midst of a simple, ongoing level or ongoing daily basis type thing, kind of like your Elmos and your blogging and that type of thing. One of the things that, you know, it's not an easy topic for me to talk about and to share, but one of the things that I'm starting to find out is it's not just me that's going to motivate the students. There's sometimes ways in which they can motivate each other. And so I can think of one time where there's two students that were kind of struggling to like just do the regular things it is to be successful in the classroom. And they were friends too. So it wasn't like I was pitting, you know, these enemies against each other. I said, hey, you know, this guy did his homework really well last night and you didn't seem to put in as much effort. Why don't you try to beat him tonight and kind of pit him against each other? And it worked for a couple days. It wasn't something that worked, you know, on a weekly basis. I could just whip it out every time. But, you know, pitting students against each other doesn't seem like the best thing from a, you know, if you don't know the exact students, I don't recommend just doing it at the beginning of the semester, but it can work out. Just another thing from an assessment perspective, I really enjoy looking at education through an assessment perspective, is seeing assessment as this way in which students can be motivated as well, not necessarily to get the grade, but after they've done like some sort of formative assessment, a quiz or something like that, where they can get together and learn from each other. It's more motivating knowing that if I don't get it, it's not just a bad grade. I can then go learn from someone else who's going to help me out. Go ahead. I think you had something to say there.
Well, I was just going to say, you touched on this idea that motivation doesn't necessarily last. You know, these things that you're trying, it may not last the full week or this full semester. And that's one thing that's been tough for me too, is because I've been allowing kids to bring their cell phones or iPod touches into class.
Sure.
And that's something that really motivates them. I have trouble even calling it motivation, because it just gets them to do what I'm asking them to do, which I guess that's motivation, but it's not something that's going to last. You know, the shine on that activity will, you know, I'll lose that at some point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for now, I just think about the difference between having kids raise their hands to take a poll and using poll everywhere in their cell phones to take a poll.
Yeah.
And the excitement and the kids that are getting up out of their seat to see the results and stuff. I mean, it's motivating for them, I think it adds to the climate in the classroom for that time, as kids are excited about what we're doing. And you know what, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes, I guess. if what I feel like I'm doing is valuable, and if the digital tools make it so that the kids are excited about it, then there you go. That works for me.
I think one of the keys I've kind of heard from you, and maybe through me as well, for motivation might be that it's not just a one-time or an every-week type thing. It's part of motivation is changing it up every so often. And yep, what works one week is for sure not going to work the next week, but it might work 2 weeks from, you know, don't just do that same review activity or that same lesson format all the time. Changing it up by nature could be just one general motivating tool. You know, I think about why do certain things work right now at the beginning of the semester? And as I look back at the end of last semester, they didn't work so well because they're new right now. And changing things up could be a big thing there.
Well, I think that even applies to this whole idea of going after kids' interests. Because, you know, I'm really interested in baseball. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to try to teach me everything in every subject and relate it back to baseball, I'm going to get bored after a while. You know, so the idea is that you're finding, building relationships, that's what you keep going back to, and that is so huge. Is building these relationships so you know what kids are interested in. It's not what works for those certain kids. It's just, they're humans. And so learning about them and understanding them, you'll find out what helps them learn. I mean, that's what it is. You know, you're not tricking them into learning. You're just trying to find out what it is that helps them learn.
So trying new things seems to be a pretty big aha moment here is, hey, it may not work. It may not work with this kid, but it may work later on with someone else or with a different student or with that student. And wow, it's a big topic to tackle.
Oh yeah, motivation is, it's just tough. I mean, when you think about it, we've isolated ourselves as teachers into this classroom, you know, into this school, into this classroom, into this period, and we take kids all the way out of their comfort zone, as far out of their comfort zone as we can take them, and then we say, now be motivated. You know, be motivated in this alien environment, you know, in this place that is totally different from what you're used to, and now motivate yourself to do these things that I'm asking you to do. You know, so yeah, I think this is extremely hard. It's extremely hard to do.
From a high school perspective, I think it doesn't get any easier because students are starting to think, what am I going to do after this year, you know, if they're a senior? And if they flat out don't see this activity or this thing matching up with their college aspiration or their work or technical college, whatever it is, they're just flat out not going to be interested. You know, if they want to work at McDonald's, and they probably really could care less about proofs. Even though it might be a good thinking skill, they really could care less about formal mathematical proofs and geometry. On the flip side, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, and on some level, I don't blame them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm at this point, it took me a while until I was like 25, but I want to be a teacher. And so there's a lot of stuff in life that I'm going, that doesn't really interest me. You know, so for them, you know, we can say, well, we know that you don't really want to work at McDonald's, but they don't know that, or they don't think that. You know, they think that they've got it figured out, and I don't blame them for thinking that. I thought that too.
Yeah, I am with you there, and that's what makes it such a challenge. We don't know what they're going to do. They don't know what they're going to do, and in the interim, we're all just forced to try to help them do something, and that's kind of where it
what
is.
What we think is right, and that's, you know, and we are experienced, and you know, we have studied this stuff, and we have life experience, but it is, you know, when we boil it down, it is what we think is right. It is what we think they should be learning.
Let's put a wrap on her here. I have this feeling though that we're gonna have to bring this one up again. I know we said that before on other topics, but this one's way too big for one episode. I need to process a little bit more, and I think as we gain more experience and start thinking about it some more, I'm sure we'll have more anecdotal evidence for certain things that work and don't work. But I'm kind of getting nervous already for the 3-minute gut check, though. Maybe I want to go back to the two perspectives. That's a lot easier. Even though it's a tough topic, I get nervous. I get nervous with this gut check stuff.
Well, I got my question ready for you. Are you ready?
You get the timer ready, and I guess I'll have to be ready.
I've got the timer ready.
Okay.
All right, 3 minutes, Matt. Here is a hypothetical situation.
Okay? Oh, geez.
You get to pick out the book and lead a staff-wide book study at your school. Everybody. Administrators, teachers, everybody. What's the book, number one? And what does the process, what's the book study look like?
Oh, geez.
3 minutes.
Okay. All right. Here's the two books I would choose. And one of them's not even a book. One of them is some sort of book on developing trust. I think if a group of people does not have trust, there's no way they're going to get along. There's no way they're going to trust. There's no way they're going to do anything. It's just somebody, a principal or a staff developer saying, oh, here's what you should do. And no one believes them. So with that in mind, the book I would probably choose is one of the DeFore PLC books. I think that there is, you know, Russ is giving me the thumbs up here like, yeah, go for it. I really think that there is something with these PLCs and with collaborating together that supersedes all other initiatives, all other, you know, assessment, you know, reading across, writing across the curriculum, all that stuff. If people aren't working together, then it's just going to be pockets of excellence. And that's kind of how I started the podcast today, saying I realize that I need to be out collaborating, whether it's formally or informally, talking with other teachers in my building to make things happen. I just envision this school where we're all like using our own digital tools. We're all doing these own things, and all of a sudden something doesn't work, and I just like walk out in the hallway and I wonder, is there anybody else in the school that has this same problem or has this same success? And if we're not getting together and collaborating, that's where the PLC comes in. Now I've got about half the time left here to describe how it's going to actually work. It's going to have to start with, I think, showing models of what it could look like. But at the same time, I realize that whenever you do show a model of what it could look like, people start getting defensive and they're saying, oh, okay, why do I need that? What I'm doing now is terrible. I think there's going to have to be some sort of combination of, yeah, you are terrible, but also saying, yeah, you are, what we're doing is good. I really think Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, although I haven't read it all, really makes a lot of sense. Taking a good school to greatness really is harder than taking a poor school to a good one. And so I think really just getting trust, good to great, this whole idea of we want to get better. The only way we can get better is by coming together and collaborating in this thing called a PLC. So I think it's going to take a lot of just time of philosophical conversations, and maybe even saying, hey, what is it that would make this school great from your perspective? And my guess is that people would say, we need to talk together more. You know, you hear that all about in-services. There's too much top-down stuff. There needs to be more people sharing with other people. Well, that's the heart of what PLCs are all about. So I think giving them an opportunity to do that, to just have, hey, there's no agenda here today. Let's just talk about what would make this school better. And I think a lot of those, and it might even take a whole year of just a lot of, here's what you think we could improve on, here's what I think we need to improve on, here's what you think, here's what I think, and just giving people a chance to have those informal conversations. There really isn't a plan. It's just informal conversations for a while to get people to realize that they do indeed need to change. And I think that ends my time.
Well done, Matt. I love it. I'd love to take part in that book study. Let me know when it's time.
Okay. I'll start a virtual book study. Although that would defeat the purpose of change in this school or that school. But
yeah.
Oh man. All right. You know, we talked about would there be a day where our questions would be the same. This may
I'm
be
nervous,
the
just so you know.
This may be the closest to that day. My question that's been rolling through my mind is, what is the one idea or takeaway or educational philosophy for you, Russ, that you, in your, you know, 2 years or almost 2 years of teaching here, you would say, hey, professors at the University of Northern Iowa or wherever you've taken your educational classes, here's the one thing that you had better just drill into the minds and the heads of those pre-service teachers. What's the one thing that didn't get drilled in or that they totally just missed? We've got to have some pre-service teachers out there that are listening that would want to know, what's the one thing that they definitely need to take to heart? 3 minutes, go ahead.
Here's what I'll say. I don't know if it's a one certain like pedagogical thing or like a one, like you have to teach this lesson or something like that. But what I think is missing from pre-service programs, and it's not missing, it's just that I want it to be ramped up and like just improved, is going into classrooms. I think we spend, as pre-servicers, I think we spend way too much time in the classroom as a student versus in the classroom as a co-teacher or whatever. I just think we spend too much time in the college classroom and not enough time in the K-12 classroom. And I think that needs to start from the beginning. Personally, I think we should go your first year, maybe your first 2 years at college are where you get those, you know, your liberal arts stuff, your content things. And then I think there needs to be 2 years, not 6 months, 2 years of student teaching where you're taking night classes or whatever, because that's what it's like to be a teacher. That's what it's like. It's a full-time job. It's not 6 months. It's not 2 9-week placements where maybe you get 5 weeks on your own, and of those 5 weeks, 2 of them you're doing your cooperating teacher's lesson plans. I mean, that's not teaching. I think we have such an important opportunity for pre-service teachers where they can get into a classroom and feel comfortable enough there to fail and then learn from that failure, and we don't give them enough time to do that. I mean, think about student teaching, where you have this semester where you're student teaching, and if you fail, you have to, I mean, you're doing this whole, you're being evaluated all the time, and it's like you have this grade depending on it. It's not enough time to learn and get the A or whatever that you need to be able to be a teacher. I mean, it's almost like just it's a dog and pony show. I mean, it just doesn't work for me. Student teaching does not work for me. I think it needs to be, I mean, that's just the only way I can think about saying it, because it just has to be a more true process to what teaching actually is. You know, I think student teachers need to spend their days in the classroom, and they need to spend their nights doing that extra learning or whatever it is that we do. You know, it doesn't, I'm not saying that they need to be teaching the entire 2 years, that they don't need to be, but they need to be in the classroom full time those entire 2 years. I've got 15 seconds left. That's something I'm really adamant about. I know we do in, like, I would take a writing class and I need to do 10 hours of experience or whatever, but that is, that it's all, I think that's all just dressing. It's just window dressing on what really needs to be done for teachers to be ready. That's my 3-minute spiel on student teaching, I guess.
Oh, I think I hit a hot topic there for you. You're passionate about that.
It's frustrating because I feel like, Matt, don't you feel, and I know I'm going over time here, but I mean, don't you feel like, and maybe you don't, but we hear all the time that teachers are not prepared. You know, first year teachers, they're not prepared. You know, they're not ready for their own classroom and stuff like this. Well, why is it? I mean, I just feel like, I feel like Scott McCloud's post the other day where he's just like, it's so obvious, why do we not get it? Okay, if first-year teachers aren't prepared, if they're coming into classrooms unprepared, we're going to throw a couple more classes at them? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, why wouldn't they spend more time in the classroom getting prepared?
You know, I think of, I got a buddy that's a union plumber, and he basically spends a whole slew of time out doing stuff. And then they'll just say, okay, you're done working for 2 weeks. He'll go take a class for 2 weeks. And he'll go back and work again. And he's just filled with experience, and they throw in some classes here and there. And maybe there's some college university out there or some state that's doing it right. My guess is that there's, again, just pockets of excellence out there. Yeah. But it could be changed. And, you know, what if they were trained in what it's like to collaborate with other teachers? Do they really learn that? You only get together with one teacher for a semester to student teach. You think that teaching is this isolated activity. Right. I don't know.
Well, and I know me, just my student teaching experience, which was great, but it was because I had already worked in the classrooms of both of my cooperating teachers. Sure. I had 9 weeks at each placement, and I already knew them. I knew them well enough that I was ready. You know, they knew me, so I just stepped right in. I was ready to fail. I was ready to try things. I was ready to, you know, kind of take the reins. But I think about those people who go to a student teaching placement where they've never met the teacher before. I mean, it takes 2-3 weeks to get comfortable with somebody to be able to say, look, this may be the thing that you really like as a teacher, but I'd like to try something different. And by then, it's over. You don't have enough time to try it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. There's a timing. There's a time thing there. There's a time time limit.
And it goes back to relationships, like we were saying earlier.
Yeah, it does. Let's put a wrap on this episode, Russ. Thanks
for only 5 minutes, by the way.
Yeah. Where's my extra 2 minutes, huh? Yeah. That's all right. Maybe we'll cut that into your final thoughts time. No, I'm just kidding. Final thoughts on this episode, Russ. This is episode number 3.
I think it's all about relationships. I think that's what it kept coming back to. And really, I think even to stretch it a little bit, Posterous is about relationships too. I've got these different relationships. I've got different people on Facebook, different people on Twitter, and Posterous lets me kind of bridge that gap. So
yeah, let's see if we can get the policymakers involved here. See if they'll start measuring relationships for us instead of tests.
Gotta be data out there.
Yeah. I think it's been a good episode as well. Man, this is the first time we've done 2 in 1 month, so we're kind of up. Increasing our frequency here. Let's see if we can do that again in February. I know you guys have a baby on the way. We'll see what we can do. Maybe we'll have to, you know, baby crying in the background. We're still recording or something like that.
There we go.
Get everyone a good feel of it. Look for our next episode probably sometime in February, early February, mid-February, somewhere in there. That's a wrap. Russ, it's been another good one.
Always a pleasure, man.
Yes, we are here with Students in Mind. Have a good one.